You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast, brought to you by Ministry Grid. Ministry Grid is an online church leadership and volunteer training platform offering a library of thousands of videos and a suite of powerful admin tools to provide practical training for every area of ministry in your church. Find out more and get a free 30-day trial at ministrygrid.com/howitworks. Welcome to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Barnabas Piper, here as usual with Todd Adkins.
What?
And in case you have forgotten, Todd is the Director of Leadership here at Lifeway Christian Resources, so that means he oversees all of our leadership development efforts. I work with Todd on that. Today, we are with Brad Lominick.
What up, people? What up?
And Brad...
So, if you notice, we get slightly more excited when Brad is in.
Yes.
I love all our guests. But Brad,
but you really love me more, right?
I do.
Oh, I appreciate that.
You come in, you're always singing songs.
Yes.
Let's not start that now.
You can get me singing if you want to.
No, we're good.
Just throw out a song. Throw out a song. Throw out a song. Any song. I'll sing it right now.
Brad is a regular co-host or a semi-regular co-host. He's been on 6 or 7 times at least. So
I had about 3 of those that were. I sounded like I was incredibly sick, which I was.
Yeah, you sounded like Barry White on
NyQuil. It was awful. I mean, I listened back to those and thought, who is the jackleg that's got the bad voice?
I didn't know a jackleg.
All right. Jackleg, well, yes.
I just learned a new word, which was jackleg, which is my segue into today's subject, which is being a learner. That's right.
Good. That was strong.
Strong transition
there,
Barnabas.
So today we're talking about being a learner, and this is something that has come up over and over and over again on this podcast. So episodes with Louis Giglio and John Maxwell and Carrie Newhoff and Craig Rochelle, all of them have led off just emphasizing why that's important. Brad has said it. Todd has said it. You must be a learner if you are a leader. So that is what we're going to dig into today, looking at kind of how we can do that. What are some practices? Why is it so important? So let's just kick off with our first question. And that is, why is being a learner so important in the current leadership environment? So today versus maybe how things used to be 30, 40, 50 years ago, because the environment has obviously changed quite a bit.
Yeah. I mean, the generational issue is that you have a new generation, especially younger leaders, walking in with more knowledge than the generation before them and more knowledge at their fingertips. So the old days, you didn't necessarily have to be a learner because
you could just know more.
You could know more.
Yeah.
And you were assumed,
learned and you were done.
You were assumed to be knowing more if you were older, because that was sort of the process of becoming a leader, was that wait your turn, kid. Stay in line, you know. And at some point you'll get to be in charge.
At some point you'll stop being green and actually get to do
the whole concept of sort of apprenticeship. You learn from the one in front of you until you fill their role.
And now it hasn't changed across the board, but there is a new generation of
major disruption.
And environmentally it has changed pretty dramatically because people are pushing and everything is accelerated. Well, so people are starting their own companies and taking leadership positions in their 20s instead of in their late 30s, early 40s, things like that.
There's two things that come into play here. One, I think is, you know, the world has changed and the times they are changing all the time.
You're going to get Brad singing if you start saying things like that.
I'm trying to.
I'm holding back.
So what you have here is really two different things. One, things are progressing so quickly that it's hard to keep up. It's hard to learn something and then be able to apply it, you know, to your job, specialize in something and be like, okay, I'm good for the next 30 years. Because you had to go somewhere to get that education.
Yeah.
Whereas today, man, I can just Google it.
Yep,
so. Right. It's great that you went to college 20 years ago and you learned this, but guess what? Anybody knows what you know because they can Google it. And so now it's not just about knowledge, it's about having experience and it's about applying that experience well. I think it's a completely different playing field because of those two reasons. First, everything is changing and changing constantly. So if you're not, it's not like you can ever be learned anymore in any one subject. Well,
you never really master
something.
And even if you're a specialist in something, specialists have to continue learning too. Because say you're a computer programmer, if you don't continue to learn, technology will outpace you in a month.
Right.
Yeah. You know, if you, that's why there you know, during the recession that hit a few years ago, so many guys who were middle-aged lost their jobs and were, they couldn't find employment that matched where they were previously because they had specialized in something that everything had outpaced them. And now they just weren't, they couldn't keep up.
It's great. You got an MBA, but you don't have, there's only so much that that has prepped and prepared you for. And now
a degree proves what you learned a long time ago. Yes. It doesn't prove where you are right now.
And the good news is that if you want to be a learner, the barriers to learning have dropped basically, and are non-existent anymore in the sense that I can watch TED Talks and I can sort of
hit up iTunes U and
I mean, the fact that you're listening to this podcast sort of demonstrates you're a learner, but it also is proving out the theory that, the bar is being raised, but also the new standard for a leader is that you are learning because everybody's learning.
Yeah. So let's hit our second question, because I think it's just a natural, you know, the ball just rolls right into this. And that is, if somebody's not a leader, I'm sorry, if somebody's not a learner, what are the consequences?
You get a short shelf life, as we've said many times on the podcast. If you're a leader and not a learner, you got a short shelf life. And that's just to say, what got you here isn't going to get you to where you need to go. It's not, you know, as we've talked about in previous episodes, actually with Brad, it's important to focus on your now, and that's going to lead to your next. So, you know, absolutely crush what you're doing. But in order to continue to crush what you're doing, you have to develop yourself. You have to understand your field and where it's going and, you know, invest your time accordingly.
And typically, I mean, I've struggled with this. We probably all have. And I think most leaders do, is the more influence you gain and the more your calling becomes clear and the more authority you have, the more you climb the ladder, the potential is that your curiosity and your learning quotient will go down.
Yeah, because it gets squashed by all the responsibilities and the pressures.
Exactly. Yeah. And I would say just the opposite. The more that you become clear in your calling and the more that you are stewarding, the more your learning quotient should actually be going up, because there's more at risk and there's more at stake.
I think there are a lot of
higher level.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of people who never learn actively after they get done with college.
Yep.
Oh,
yeah. They walk across that stage, or really they finish their last final and they're done with active learning. They passively absorb things because they're human and they can't help it, but that, and they will just kind of forever be flat. They won't contribute much in the future because of that. And I'm always stunned by people like that who just don't care. There's no curiosity. There's no questions. There's no nothing.
Yeah. If you ask them the last book they read, it's going to be something from,
it'd be whatever they were assigned for their senior seminar.
The last required reading. Yeah.
And I think a lot of people would say, well, that's me in some ways, if I'm really honest, because I didn't really enjoy the college experience in terms of that type of learnings of environment. But the beauty again of today's reality is that you can create your own learning economy and your own learning environment. So it's basically build your own adventure in today's economy, which is, if you learn best by listening to a podcast, then that's readily available. If you learn best by classroom style, it's readily available. There's, you don't have to sort of fit yourself into this square peg with a, you know, with the, if you're a round hole, wait, that should be the opposite. If you're a square peg and it's a round hole.
I'm not really sure.
But what I'm saying is people will say, I hated the college experience.
Yeah. You don't have to force yourself to learn in a way that doesn't work.
Thank you.
Let's try that. I think one other consequence is that if a leader
I really nailed that one, didn't I?
Eloquence.
I was going to say, if you're a duck.
Right.
And you're climbing trees now. One other consequence is that leaders who stop learning are really frustrating to the people who are coming along behind them.
Sure.
Because they get stuck doing things an old way that other people are aware don't work, or the learners are just constantly, there's a ceiling put on them by the leader's essentially inadequacy as a learner in learning.
That's a great point.
And learning also generally, or can lead a leader to be more humble, because they will learn from the people under them. And so if I came to Todd and said, hey, what about this thing? Todd's not going to say, it's not how we do things here. He's going to say, tell me about it. Let's explore that a little bit.
Learning culture and learning a learning environment as an organization, a team, a church, a staff, you have to be willing to lead on that. You have to be setting the tone and being the example of the learning leader. You can't say to your team, all right, I want you all to get better and continue to learn. And here's the strategy. We're going to put that in place to do that. And yeah. then you're not doing it. And nobody wants, as you said, Barnabas, like you're not really being inspirational
yeah.
to your team if you're not willing to lead out on this idea of what does it look like for us to learn together. And practically, practically, like it might just mean that you lead your team in reading a book every mm-hmm. month or every quarter.
One of the things that I met with Eric Geiger, who's also a regular person on the podcast.
Now that's and a
also
learner. My Hello.
Boss daddy. Yes, he's a learner, which is why I told you, hey, see this? How many pages is this book that I brought in here? 331 pages. I need to read that by Tuesday because Geiger read it last week and wants to talk about it on Tuesday.
And so, he probably read it in 12 7 hours.
He probably yeah. did.
He's like, it. Oh, you guys have no problem if I give you a week.
But something that's really interesting, we had a conversation recently. So, I mean, you know, I could have just claimed this as my own, but got to give credit to where credit's due. So he said, hey, basically, I think that the problems that I have or the issues, the weaknesses that I have as I go down in the people I lead, as you go down to the layers and levels of people I lead, those problems or bad things are multiplied as you go down. Conversely, the things that I do positive and that relate that, you know, effect that I have on it also goes down, but it diminishes as it goes down, whereas, you know, the opposite. So I would say, you know, if you're a leader and you're expecting your team, I'm sorry, if you're a leader and you're expecting your team to learn and you're not a learner, that's not going to happen. If you want to lead a team of learners, then you got to be a learner. And that positive thing will have an effect. And also remember, if you're not a learner, then don't expect your team to be that, especially if that's not their natural tendency.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there are different people on our team that have different passions and different gifts and all that. And I would say that if you look at some of them, they're naturally going to be learners. Pretty much everybody on our team though is a natural learner.
Yeah. But even in how we go about it, there are distinct differences. I mean, there are those of us who are just sort of like, we'll constantly be talking about something, you know, hey, did you hear about this? Did you run across that? Did you see this article? And then there are others who are sort of internalized learners and they process and they absorb and they systematize. One is not better than the other, but yeah, but there's an active intent to grow in knowledge yeah. and understanding of things.
What John Wooden said, if it's what you learn after you know it all that really counts.
Well, and Todd knows it all, so he should really apply that.
I did know it all. I don't anymore.
Yeah, that's right. I did. And then it I got. Says
now I have
yeah,
to learn more.
And I graduated from college and got older. Let's hit our third question. So let's shift from sort of the theoretical, the why, to the practical, because I think we have talked so much on this episode, but previous episodes about being a learner, but not necessarily about what does it take to do that very thing? So the third question is, what are a couple habits, so two or three habits that someone can work on to develop as a learner?
I got a couple.
Fire away.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. Two. First, I would say you've got to set goals as a learner. So that's something that I don't think you do in a vacuum. I think, so like, you know, New Year's Day, I'm texting back and forth with Matt Brown. It's just what are our goals for the year? How many books are we going to read? Mm-hmm. How many this, that, the other? And, we agreed to check in at like a 90 day period.
Yeah.
And so it's like, hold yourself, set goals
yeah.
and hold yourself accountable. The second thing is I think learn and teach something. You will never learn as much as you will if you have to actually teach it.
That's right.
And the more you teach it, the more you have knowledge of it, at least. But, you know, that whole idea of learning something and teaching or learning something and then processing it with someone is really important. That's how you build competency yeah. and mastery in something, is that overlap of knowledge, experience, and coaching that we talk about all the time.
Yeah. I think I would venture to guess most people who listen to this podcast are probably pretty active learners. Like Brad mentioned earlier, the fact that they're listening to something like this means that they're trying to sponge up knowledge about things. But there are some people, I had this conversation with
he's keeping it moving. He's not letting me break in today.
None of this. I have things to say.
You guys have been doing this quite a while now. You
talk over him.
Right.
I just assume people are here for witty banter, especially when we have Brad on.
Exactly.
Well, there's always some of that too. No singing. That's a different podcast. I had a conversation with Trevin Wax the other day about what would you tell somebody if they said, you know, I don't read, what book should I read? You know, just they never read books. And that's really common. It's just that guys like us read enough that we would be thrown off by that question. Mm-hmm. I don't even know where to start. So I think the idea, you said set goals. I think for some people, set the goal to like read a book every 2 months. So see if you can get through 5 this year.
Yeah.
You're not going to get anywhere that way.
No, you will, because you'll get through 5 books if you didn't read any last year.
If you didn't read any, then you're making progress.
Yeah, but it takes you 2 months to read a book, you didn't get anything out of it.
It's taken me
the Bible.
Or Dallas Willard.
Or we had this discussion yesterday.
I know. It's taken me 6 months to make it through 4 chapters.
Divine Conspiracy. I told him, I was like, I hate Divine Conspiracy. I didn't never finished it because I couldn't read it the way I read normal books. Because you have to like really and be intentional about every word and almost chew on every word to really understand it.
And my point was not set low goals, but start realistically and then increase them. Because if you start with 5 this year, do 10 next year and 15 the year following, and you'll end up getting to the place where you're consuming a lot. But you can't listen to Todd say, I'm going to read 50 books this year and go.
That may not be your best way to, you're just going to be torturing yourself.
Didn't say I was reading 50.
You may need to
Geiger's reading 50.
You may need to listen to three or four iTunes U courses, because listening during a long commute is a better way for you to absorb, or go watch 2 TED Talks a month or something. But setting goals is good, but set the ones that are right for you and that are realistic for you.
Yeah. I think it's building it into your rhythm of your day and week is really important as a habit. I would add a couple. One would be seek out different, in the sense that a habit as a learner is find people who are different than you and who are in different industries, different job areas, maybe different locations. And you're doing this intentionally because you're trying to learn from somebody outside of your normal circle.
Right.
And many times, even in the creativity process, I've found over the years that the best way for me to break free of creative fog is to get outside the norm. And so this is true with your learning. Like, seek out some people who are different. The other one would be that you seek out some people that you really admire. And this may be two or three people.
I was going to say something along the same lines.
Yeah, I mean, 2 or 3 people, maybe 5 at the most. But these are folks who you really want to learn from. And you know, don't email them a whole paragraph or more in this whole, like, book on why you should learn from them. Send them an email or get in touch with them and basically say, hey, here's one question I'd love to ask you. And is it okay if I emailed you, you know, a question every once in a while? How can I help you? How can I serve you? But these are people that you want to learn from, but you can't expect them to all of a sudden drop everything they do and just be at your beck and call. But you can reach out and honor them and be willing to just open up the conversation a little bit.
I think I had a similar one, and I just wrote down the phrase collect influencers. So a handful of people who you just go, I would like to either read everything they write, listen to everything they say, and just absorb from them. And that may be for a limited amount of time, because you may find somebody who connects better with you at another stage, but you just absorb from key people. Another one is just don't discount anybody. And this is a discipline because we are prideful people, and it's very easy to look at somebody and go, I have nothing to learn from that person. But I was challenged.
Why did you point at me?
I pointed with my right hand and you're to my right. Sorry. We are prideful people, Todd. I was challenged when Craig Groeschel was on, because he talked about how he brings in groups of people from all the different age levels in his church and different ministries. And so he's got 15 teenagers in a room with him, and he's just pestering them with questions about how do you view life, how do you use technology, all these things. And it's much easier to assume that that group of people has nothing to offer. And he was absorbing everything he could from them about how their worldview works and how their habits are and what he needs to know so that he can minister to them. And I thought, that's a more humble person than I am. He is much more aware of what he needs than I am of what I need. And I should try to do that in my context, something similar.
What's interesting to me is the best mentoring relationships I've had have been symbiotic. And where we were learning things from each other, like right. I may have been learning leadership principles and how to do church and like watching them deal with some big problem or, you know, them allowing me to ask questions like, why did you do this instead of this, you know, behind closed doors kind of thing. And then at the same time, I'm teaching them stuff about technology or I'm teaching, this is when I was younger. I still know my way around technology a little bit, but you know, do you know what I'm saying? Like it was, yeah. There was a give and take part of that relationship. And, you know, just in thinking about that, I would tell both younger and older people to think about that, to think about, are there relationships like that that you have had or do have and just challenge you. Most of us are going to actually, if we're going to transform an area of our life, if we're going to really learn something and master something in our life, it's usually in the context of a relationship. There's got to be some interplay there, in my opinion.
And the final one I would say, I mean, on habits is please people, please.
For the love.
For the love. Would you write it down? I mean, honestly.
Yeah.
This is the number one, I don't know if it's number one, but it is one of the greatest reasons why we don't actually become experts at something. Or we don't actually get better is we don't actually allow ourselves to consume it and then for it to be retained in our mind. So we go to conferences or we go to lunches, we go to conversations and we just listen, and listening is important. It's huge, but you got to like actually take some of the stuff we've vastly
overestimate our ability to remember things.
We do.
I will walk out of a meeting and assume, and while I'm in the meeting, I'll think, I've got this. I'll remember this. I'll go back to my office.
Oh, 5 minutes later.
There was something I was supposed to do.
What did we talk about last time?
I mean, I don't remember. And it was like something that, it would be something that Todd said, hey, can you do this? And I'll say yes. And if I don't write it down, I will forget by the time I get to my office.
Because I didn't remember either.
And there's so many great
that's
apps
true.
Now that allow you to do this. I mean, I use the Notes app on my phone.
Yeah, there's Notes. There's Evernote. There's this cool thing called a pen and paper.
Moleskine.
That works really well. Moving into our next question, and it's kind of like the previous question. All learning and all curiosity is based on questions. It's mm-hmm. there's either an implied question or you have very explicit questions. Most people, I don't think, are very good question askers. They don't even know where to start. They don't know anything about like how to get at the knowledge that they would like to have.
Right.
And then maybe they don't even know what they don't know. So how can someone learn to ask better questions?
Well, let me start on this because this is one of my soapboxes. I love the idea of a great question asker because I've tried to live this out. The first thing is that you're asking a question not based on setting yourself up for an answer. And a lot of us are asking a question with the premise that I'm setting myself up to be the expert.
Yeah.
And when you're asking a question, what you're doing is, one, you're giving honor to the person who you're talking to. Two, you're giving them the ultimate expression of value because their opinion matters. And so you're elevating them. And your next question then is built on the answer they just gave you.
Yeah.
Not on the answer you want to give.
Yeah, you're not waiting to give your response.
Right. And most of the time, I mean, this is conversational, it's interview. If you watch great interviewers, they're following the flow of the conversation. They're not necessarily following like the questions they wanted to ask.
Right.
So you've got to be willing to listen to someone who you're having a conversation with and then go where they're going and give honor to them while they're going there. And part of what you're always thinking as a great question asker is, how am I honoring that person? Like, how am I elevating them? How am I giving them the seat at the table, which says your opinion really does matter?
I can't think of the book for the life of me, but there's actually a decent, very short book on asking good questions, and I can't remember what it is. It's an academic book.
Really?
Of course it's academic. But it's all about, so if you look at the way we put together some of the questions in Ministry Grid or when we're thinking about learning something,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
There are different types of questions that you can ask. So I would say, hey, study questions, study the types of questions. Mm-hmm. So when you have a new leader coming into a position or you're trying to explain something to someone new, you're probably going to ask them an observation question or opinion question. And then you begin to move into deeper and deeper types of questions, like interpretation comes next. That's a little bit deeper. And then you go into application or implementation. Now that's deeper still. Mm-hmm. And so it's what begin to like, just take some time, set a goal as a learner to, you know, learn about asking good questions, because it will be one of the best things that it will serve you better than anything else in your life.
If you're a young leader, so many young leaders, their felt need is to elevate themselves in the conversation or in the discussion or at the table. And a lot of people think that the way you elevate yourself is to give a good answer. Mm-mm. I think it's actually you elevate yourself by asking a good question.
A good question shows that you have really good observations because you're taking what somebody else said, you're absorbing it, and you're responding with the respect that Brad talked about earlier, but also with you're furthering the idea. So they say something intelligent and you say something to help them speak even more intelligently or speak something else. And so you're showing your engagement, your insights without saying, look at me.
Yeah. You're showing that you're listening to them.
Right. You gain power. And
listening is, I mean, that's a powerful relational tool, which will be beneficial in anything. I would say for most of us, myself included, just disciplining yourself to ask more questions. I mean, set aside the quality of the question for a moment. Set aside the layers of questions. Most of us just need to start by saying, I need to ask more questions. You know, I need to, when somebody says something to me, instead of just going, okay, respond with a question, show engagement, show that you're listening, and you'll probably draw out something and it will become more of a habit. But that, I mean, that's not something that comes very easily. That is, again, it's a discipline and a habit, and maybe a goal to set is in any conversation, I'm going to ask at least one question instead of just going back and forth.
Yeah, I think you're going to impress more people with asking good questions than ever are.
No question.
Trying to tell them. I see what you did there.
Yeah, you see what I.
Yeah. I smell. Yeah. I smell that.
Well, let's move to our fifth question, and we'll continue to learn by asking questions. Obviously, learning a bunch of stuff doesn't mean anything unless you can do something with it. Otherwise, you just have a library of knowledge in your head that's gathering dust and accomplishing nothing. So how does someone take the information they've gathered by being a question asker, by doing these habits, and then determine what to apply and how to apply it? So essentially, what is wisdom in this case in taking learning and turning it into a transformed kind of life?
Man, that sounds like a pipeline question for Todd Atkins right there.
Well, it could be a pipeline question, but I would say two things. You can either do this introspectively and do what Brad said and write it down and process it, journal through it, and ask yourself some questions like, what can I do to this? How can I apply this? And answer that question or process it with another person.
Or do both. I think some things you need to do both ways. I'm a verbal processor in general, but it's enormously valuable for me to write things down, journal through them, see how they apply in my life, those kinds of things. But I think one of the hardest things to do is knowing what to apply.
Yeah.
Many things are very clear how to apply them. If somebody, you know, if you get good advice, it's pretty clear how to apply it. But if you're a leader and you know, you're reading books about systems and changes and whatever, you can't just take all the information that you have learned and apply it all. You'll be changing all the time. You'll be jerking people around. You'll be like, it just stuff will be a mess. So it's, I'm asking how do you, because part of learning is learning what to do. So how do you, like, what are some things that people can do to know, how do I take good information and apply it well and then set aside the stuff that's maybe not for now?
Well, I would say too that, you know, I'll hear people tell me, well, I'm not in a leadership position. I can't apply some of those things. And I'm like, no, leadership can be practiced from any level within an organization. You just have to figure out what element and to what degree you can apply whatever principle it is you have learned or are trying to learn and experience it. So it may be that you want to learn how to oversee, you know, staff. Well, you don't have staff, but maybe you've got volunteers, or maybe you can get some, or maybe you can get some interns, or
and
maybe whatever.
You can file it away by writing it down, by taking notes, and then someday when you lead a team of 300 or 400 people, you go back and you say, I heard some really good things from so-and-so on this, and then all of a sudden those come to the top of the list of things to apply. So it's like it's a filing system for things, you know, like I have a list of leadership and management lessons that I've learned from terrible bosses and great bosses over the years, some of which have no application in my life whatsoever because I don't lead a team of people right now, but they're sitting there on my computer and I add to them periodically because
he adds to them a lot.
He does.
Don't do's. That's right.
I would say the writing down for me, typically what happens is I write it down, and then every so often I'm going back through all of those notes. And in many ways, like the Holy Spirit is sort of prompting for me, like things that will sort of jump out or go, or I'll be convicted about in my own leadership. It's like, oh, it's time to really dive into this one a little bit more, think more on this one, or share this with the team. And so much of learning is being able to file it. Mm-hmm. And then find it.
Yes.
Like file it and find it. File it and find it. File it and find it.
Is that your new book, File It and Find It?
It should be, actually. The double F. F2.
Well, we were just talking before we started about what you might have next in store.
File it and find it.
Well, and I think the How to Read a Book episode that we did with Eric Geiger, I don't know.
It was early on.
Early on. Go back and look at that one.
That's
one of the most, it's one of the most listened to episodes. But I think we talked about how we both have the same habit of keeping the notes
in the book itself.
Yeah. That, hey, people, the blank pages in the beginning and the end of the book are for taking notes margins.
So publishers spend a lot of money on that extra paper in the margins.
They do. And so just having that discipline will help you on multiple fronts. Number one, you're going to have the key takeaways for you personally from that book. So it's better than executive summaries. It's better than, you know, a summary you could read of the book because it's your summary and it's the things that you were most impressed with. So I think, and that discipline is really helpful. One of the greatest things that ever happened to me was I was on staff at a church and seminary, and the pastor, because I was already a voracious reader anyway, he would basically, a given part of my time was consolidating books, and he would hand me a book. And I would spit out basically what is now an executive summary of that book. And it was extremely valuable for me as a learner.
And a lot of learning is off of pain points, right? I mean, when you have a child, you start reading or at least looking into books on raising children that will help you. You know, if you're stepping
you
into
won't find very many helpful ones, by the way, but you can try.
Based on experience, so yes. You would say there's
not very many.
It's time for you to write one then.
It's not very many impressive parenting. Here's the thing.
Which ones? What do you think?
Goodness sakes.
Trip? You like Trip?
Yeah.
Shepherding your child's
heart.
Here's
the problem.
Is that Trip?
I just said there's not very many good ones, which means I'm going to end up insulting authors, and I'd rather not do that publicly.
We probably shouldn't do that.
That's right. So
I will say I love Trip's
Shepherding a Child's Heart.
Shepherding a Child's Heart. I do love that one.
I think one other thing that we've sort of touched on but hasn't come up explicitly is that an enormous amount of learning is not done in isolation. So you can read and listen and write by yourself, but especially in applying knowledge, it's done with a group of people. So how do you know what to apply? You talk about what you're learning with somebody else, and if it's something that is wise and whatever, it'll resonate. And people can talk through it, and they can give their input, and you can apply the knowledge of asking questions now. So there's having people around you. You can have learning conversations with, exploring conversations with, and that can be about faith, that can be about business, that can be about family, that can be about sports, hobbies, whatever. But you need to have people to do this. Otherwise, you are basically just collecting knowledge for yourself. And even if you're trying to apply it, there's a limit to what you can do.
Yeah. The more it passes through the filter of other people, the more refined and helpful it will become.
And it's going to, when you send out something that you learned to somebody else, it's going to come back in a different shape because they're going to add their input, or they're going to say, hey, I ran across this and this. And so it will enhance that because it's something you didn't have prior.
And don't feel like you have to sort of create that as this new book reading club, although right. that's fine. You know, you have people in your life who you can process with.
What, and if you're
kids, spouse, friends,
if you're doing church, the discipline of asking questions, it will happen naturally.
Dog.
Yeah, exactly. Dogs are great conversations. They're really good listeners.
They're really good listeners. They don't live by the two for one. They live by the two for none.
That's right.
Like, you know, they don't say anything back. That's two right. for one, meaning that you listen twice as much as you speak.
Right. Okay.
They listen and don't twice speak. As much as they speak and don't speak.
Until yeah. they bark at the mailman, which I think is probably the place to land this because we're talking about dogs
who let
and
the
speaking.
Dogs out.
And boom, Brad singing. Boom, all right. Boom. Let's,
we made it. We almost made
let's
it.
Let's crash land this plane. We appreciate all you listeners and the fact that you think you can learn from us, or maybe you're just amused by what we have to say. But either way, thank you for listening. And if you would jump on iTunes and leave us a kind rating and review, we would appreciate you even more. So thanks so much for listening and tune in next time. Thank you for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. To learn more about how you can train leaders in your church, visit ministrygrid.com/howitworks and watch a short demo video. For participating, you will get a free 30-day trial for your entire church. Again, that's ministrygrid.com/howitworks.